Greetings and welcome to STL Soccer Talk here at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLToday.com. And if you're listening, thank you very much for being here to listen to us. And we hope to
we love our subscribers.
I would do
the little heart hands thing, but you can't see that.
I wish you could all be here in the room with us and to be very crowded, and it'd overheat very quickly. But it would be. Anyway, thank you all who are listening. And if you want to mention this to others, please do. Hey, you know what? After back-to-back podcasts of talking about 0-0 ties.
It was an interesting game.
It was an interesting game. By the way, and I should say 0-0, but I don't know how you feel about this, but as an editor, that if people call that a scoreless tie, but is it really a scoreless tie? Because there is a score, that it was 0-0. It was a goalless tie.
It's a little bit like when police release the identity of someone. This is going to be a really morbid example, but when police release the identity of somebody who's been killed, and sometimes headlines say police name victim, and it's like, well, the victim already had a name. They just have identified and publicly released it. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I guess you could quibble about a scoreless tie, but we don't need to this week.
We don't.
Because City scored goals.
Not one, not two, three, count them, three goals. And actually, it's funny. I believe it's the second time in their last five games that they've won 3-0, because they had a 3-0 win over Houston at the tail end of last year.
Yeah, but I feel like when you have to jump a season break, yes, it is, but it, multiple months in between.
Yeah, in their first season.
Yes.
The halcyon days of 2023, they had...
Back when the sky was rosy.
Yes. Everything was rosy back then. They had not one, not two, not three, but four wins of shutout wins of 3-0 or better. 2-3-0s and 2-4-0s. So
it was an excellent game. And Olaf Melberg certainly found things that he thought could have gone better. But if you can't find things that would go better, are you even a coach? the offense was clicking at the same time that the defense was, unlike some previous games. And City was up against a depleted Los Angeles team, but you can't argue with what you saw on the field from the City players.
Mm-hmm. No, and, we talk about, yes, it was depleted. City lost a lot of games last year when they were depleted, and the points count just the same for those other teams, and they pulled City down into a hole every bit as much because they were depleted. And one of the things that they didn't always do last year was take advantage of depleted teams or teams that were playing their third game in 8 days or whatever, things like that. They came up against teams that were going through all sorts of trouble, and didn't do it. When they played DC United early in the year, DC United was, and they didn't win that one. So
won. Brookie stood on his head several times.
Mm-hmm.
And the offense looked a lot better. The passes were definitely connecting better throughout the field. Klaus hit the post, so we're getting closer.
Getting closer.
Maybe next week.
They obviously came out with more energy and enthusiasm and more attacking and made things work. As it turns out, their possession stats were every bit as bad as last week's.
This is not a team that wants to, or in this last game at least, needs to have the ball at their feet the entire game. Mm-hmm. But they did more with the ball when they had it.
We're going to take two games in which the team has the ball for basically a third of the game. Mm-hmm. They looked so much better and really had kind of, I don't want to say control, but really did a lot more, in that third. I mean, the last 20 minutes of the first half, they had no possession in that. I mean, that may have been all of it. But they, in the first 25 minutes, they did stuff with it. And then in the second half, they withstood another storm, but for a game, it looked nowhere near as bad as the San Diego game did. For games which statistically had a lot in common.
Yes.
But obviously more shots and more scoring opportunities. And really, Cedric Toyard's first goal, which was a you know, a pretty easy goal.
A pretty gimme goal, but they were able to bury it.
Yes.
In a moment where it did kind of seem like, the forwards are just shooting into the side netting, shooting wide, shooting high.
And that's a lot of times what you need to get out of one of these things is you need the ball to bounce off people. And all of a sudden, hey, there's a guy standing in front of the goal, you know, 5 yards out. Hey, let me, you know, hey, I cannot humanly miss this, you know, shot. And put it in. In hockey, they would talk about greasy goals, you know, and this is this kind of meets that description where you get the ball into a dangerous area and it bounces around and all of a sudden there's Hedrick Toyer, there's a ball, and there you go. Henry Kessler gets his first MLS assist by not doing a whole lot, by the ball kind of bounces off him, and you know, I don't know how much to say he had in the ball going to Toyer, but it went to him, and in it went.
It was an awkward play, far more awkward for LA than for City. The goalie went up to try to grab it, and it looks like maybe it just slipped. He never caught it.
They had too many people. They had like four people that the ball came to, and they just kind of got in each other's way. And he kind of was reaching over a teammate to kind of get it, and it got knocked out. And then it hits Klaus, it hits Kessler, and then it comes to Toyer, and then you go. And that changed a whole lot of things because they had not had a whole lot of chances in those last 20 minutes of that half, and they got that one there. And you know, all of a sudden you're up 1-0, and then they could say, you know, should have had more, and it doesn't hurt quite as bad as it might have if it was 0-0
right
at that point, because you know Thomas Tatlin had a great chance that
he did.
He did not take well. Toyer had one earlier that I think he was trying to go near post with it, and he just didn't put it where it needed to go, and so he had to. It had to be good for him, but good for, you know, Toyer scores, Hartle scores, Betcher scores, and but you know if you get those three, I mean those are the three guys that did it at the end of last season.
Exactly.
And so that is a big step. Klaus is still over in the other, you know, other pouch, but. but those three guys are there, and that's – look, and they've got three of their four. I mean, look, these are the four guys that are going to score goals on this team this year. I mean, if they're not the top four, you know, someone's doing really well or someone's bad.
Having a really breakout season, which would be great.
Yeah.
But exactly, the team needs those three players to start scoring, to start connecting with each other in ways that you saw them doing this game.
Yeah. And they were the guys that did it at the end of last year and that made last season end as well as it did, and where the optimism for this season came from.
Mm-hmm.
So very good start there. But the man of the hour, the man of the 90 minutes, was Roman Berkey in goal. And again, not much to do in the first two games. I mean,
exactly.
You know, one save. You know, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, you know, he was not needed for much. But this is why you have Roman Berkey. This is, you know, as you know, Toyer said after the game, this is why he's the best goalkeeper in the league. It's why City needs to keep him because, you know, no offense to Ben Lunt or Christian Olivares, but Roman Berkey, I mean, those were some brilliant nice saves. I mean, diving and getting hands on balls. I mean, you know, quick reaction save on shots from really close. I mean,
yes.
Eight saves, I think seven of them were from not too far out.
Right.
I mean, you know, this was a big game for Roman Berkey. And, you know, does City win the game without him?
I don't think so.
You know?
I mean, certainly not all of those shots would have necessarily gone in. You saw the ball hit the post on at least one of them. But Berkey, not just making those saves, but organizing the defense, organizing the team as a whole. I mean, he's the captain. Yeah, I think we can go ahead and start the campaign to keep Roman Berkey in town right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know many other goalkeepers that could make that type, those types of plays.
Yeah, and he, I mean, it was just impressive what he did, you know. He called upon in some of the, and there were different kinds of saves, and
yes.
It just, and they're not all, you know, positioning. I mean, he was doing all sorts of things to do them, and he was just all over the place, and it, you know, his contract is up. I don't know. You know, and I don't think money would be an object on this because, how much can he ask, you know?
How much more could he ask?
Ask. I mean, he's the highest paid keeper in the league at $1.5 million.
Right.
But even if he asks for $3 million, double my salary, I think everyone on the team from
even,
Joey Zielinski up to
Ben
the top.
Lunt would sign that contract.
Would say, yeah, you got to pay this guy this much. And at $1.5 million, it's not that.
There are players whose contracts are coming up that you could quibble with, that you could say, look, in terms of, how many minutes they've played versus how much they're getting paid, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. Berkey, by any measure, is worth it. Mm-hmm. He's worth every penny he makes because he is able to play in so many games, and he makes the kinds of saves that he does.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is the difference. You can clearly say he's not getting old. While he is getting old,
he's not showing his age.
His game is not – he's still in the prime of his career, goalkeeper-wise. And so would you be afraid to sign him for another 3 years? No, there'd be no reason. But it's going to come down to, does he have opportunities in Europe that are appealing to him that he wants to go back and do? And that's going to be – that. I think is going to be the thing. I mean, unless he, says, no, I want to make $10 million or something, but which would completely,
An MLS team is not going to pay a goalkeeper that much money.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's any other goalkeeper that makes over $1 million, at least, So it's just a question of, I think, what the demand is for him. Mm-hmm. Is there a team in the top four league? Is there a team in England, Germany, Italy, or Spain that makes him an offer to be the number one keeper? Would he want to do that?
Would he want to go back to Europe?
Yeah.
Would be, I think, the second part of that question.
Yeah. And then there are things like, is it a team that is going to be fighting to avoid relegation, or is it a team in which you're playing in Europe and you are in the Champions League and things like that? And if he gets that chance, you can't begrudge anyone for saying a chance to play in the Champions League or a chance to fly to the West Coast 7 times a year and to play play San Jose. I think there is the guy's played at Borussia Dortmund. He has played at the highest level of the sport. That that's going to be appealing to him. So in some ways, it may be out of City's hands, other than them making life as wonderful as it can be for Roman Berkey, someone waiting for him with grapes when he walks in the door.
Yes. How can we help you today?
Yeah, this is the permanent concierge for Roman Berkey. But that was the I can't see a scenario in which they do not volitionally say, when they willingly say, no, we've got other options.
I mean, Lutz Fannenstiel is not a sentimental person, but he is a practical person. I think we can both agree.
Yeah.
And practically speaking, Berkey is already here. The team should make a good play to keep him here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because it would be tough to get another goalie who's like Roman Berkey. It worked out that here's, the way his career was going, that he came here. And it's funny, you look at another guy whose contract is up this year, in Klaus, who, hits the post. And right now, if someone said, well, you re-up Klaus for another 3 years, you'd say, hasn't scored a goal since May and came close and certainly, does all sorts of other things.
But he's being paid a lot of money to do all sorts of things that you could probably find a replacement for. And he's also aging, and is he beginning to show his age in that he hasn't been able to make these plays?
Yeah, though he is younger than he looks.
He is, you're correct, younger than he looks. No offense, Klaus, the hair's not helping.
Yeah, but that would be, he's a guy, he's a designated player. And you count on DPs to
earn that status.
Earn that salary, yeah. And so he's got to score goals. Mm-hmm. And again, it's been, I don't know, was it an 18 game, something like that, since he has scored. And yeah, injuries took up a big chunk of time, but he's got to get that. And he almost had it.
Almost.
And there was another, at least one other play in that game in which it looked like, you know, if the pass had been right where it needed to be, that he could have done something with it. Mm-hmm. But the pass, I think, was a little behind him, and he couldn't take it.
Right.
But that's the difference. I mean, and Bricky, not a DP anymore. They bought him down. And if he's going to get a bigger contract, he's going to have to be a DP. He's kind of at the maximum level that you can be a DP and be bought down.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't, you know, they can't give him a big raise without making him a DP. So do they need a DP spot? You know, how does that, because Klaus is a DP and they can't buy him down, but on a next contract, they would be able to buy him down.
Gotcha.
Because there's not, the transfer fee now keeps him from being bought down. This is more
roster madness.
Esoterica
MLS.
That probably is not germane to many of our
the spreadsheet that the front office has to use in order to figure out the money and the GAM and who's on which level of I can't even imagine.
Yeah, so there we've made the case that Roman Bürki needs to stay around, but it's going to be, I think, his call.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the defense as a whole, probably not as good just because the Galaxy had the chances they had. There was way more chances than either San Diego or Colorado had.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something. I mean, that was why he had to make more saves, was because there were better chances.
Exactly.
For the other team. So maybe not the backline's best game.
But you still saw almost all the backline players making key moves to stop runs, to tackle the ball. Not the best game for the back line so far, but definitely not one where you watched with a ton of concern.
Yeah. Yeah, Henry Kessler got some balls out of difficult situations, difficult positions on the field, was able to control them and clear them. Kyle Hebert had an assist, but also had a turnover that led to a dangerous chance, and that's two in two games. As we record this on Monday, they have not taken the field yet ever since returning from Los Angeles, but expect to see Joachim Nielsen back on the field with the team this week. Obviously, he would be one of your first choice. If you have three center backs, it would be him. And then we saw Timo Baumgartel get in the game for the final, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, and as often with those late subs, hard to tell much about his play, unless I interrupted you too soon.
No. It's not much to say. And they had, at that point in time, the defensive configuration, they already had, they really had four center. You know, Josh Yarrow had come into the game at that point, so it was a different situation. But we'll see now, is this the step towards Baumgartel being in there more? Because ultimately, the three center backs should be Kessler, Nielsen, and Baumgartel. Mm-hmm. Those are the top three guys.
Right.
And so now, you know, when I asked Milberg about Baumgartel last week, he said, look, the guy hasn't played a game in a long time. We've got to, you know, he's just practiced. We've got to get him into more game situations. So is this the start of that, and now does next week he go 30 minutes and then he's ready to go
the
90
whole, right.
after that? I mean, if Timo Baumgartel is not one of the three center backs, it means that the other guys are doing really great.
Which is good for those other guys.
Yeah.
But is it good for the roster as a whole with the how much you're paying?
Yeah. And then the other factor, Jonas Horn, who can be the left side, you know, likes to be a center back, though you can also play him just as a straight left back.
Right.
So what does that work into? Mm-hmm. How does that all come together? Because then, as we've seen, these roster moves start snowballing. Well, then if you put Horn out there, then where do you put Wallum? You know, Wallum's up there, but then now all of a sudden that's taken one of your midfield spots, and you've already got Toyard and Hartle and Klaus and Leuven and Durkin, and now all of a sudden you got 12 guys on the field, and someone's
that's
not allowed. So it becomes a tricky situation once you do that. So that, yeah, we have to see how that plays out as they have, as they start to get these options on the back line.
And it's good to have these options because, as we've seen already this season, you're going to have injuries up and down the field. So you want to be able to have options and then have a wealth of them when everybody is healthy.
Yes. The more options, the better. And they got to, you know, you'd rather be sitting Josh Yarrow and Kyle Hebert and right. Michael Venzel rather than the guys who are first team top level
being paid talent. That way. Talent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, if you're in a situation where you're paying the guys who are making the league minimum and benching the guys who are not making the league minimum, then there's been a miscalculation somewhere.
Exactly.
And so considering the amounts of money being paid to Kessler and Baumgartel and Nielsen and Horn, those are the guys
you want playing.
You want playing if you were to – and not that all of our worth in society – is associated with the amount of money we get paid, because there are many of us who are not paid much money, but who make valuable contributions. And so it's not as though.
But when you're on a professional team that has very strict roster rules and minimums and maximums and designated players and all of the other things, you're a designated player. You have to be earning that salary.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah, you have to perform at a level commiserate with the
right. So this is one of those cases where I just am very grateful that I am not a professional player and being measured by very clear statistics and very clear salary and a money per minute on the field calculation that is very easily made for some of these positions.
Mm-hmm. So the Bethel Valley Moneyball system, glad it's not there, but you know what? I mean, I think the contributions you make are quite. I was gonna make a different point, but for instance, as an ode to my older brother Jim, who spent his career working at small town newspapers because that was kind of the thing he'd chosen. But
you don't make money.
But a hell of a guy, a hell of a journalist.
For sure.
A great writer, a great editor. So there are people that work at smaller places that are actually incredibly talented and deserve credit. So just because Josh Yarrow is making the league minimum doesn't mean that he's not, you know.
For sure. Definitely. And this is one of those things that sometimes talking about professional athletes, I do feel a little uncomfortable, you know, talking about salary and performance and things like that, because those are all just part of who they are. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like when we talk about trades, and I just can't imagine the emotional impact of a trade on somebody who, like, I'm trying my best here and who didn't like me. Like, that's a hard thing to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And I mean, this is something that Josh Schertz at St. Louis U says all the time, is that that these guys care. Don't ever think that these guys don't care. I mean, the level of competitiveness required to reach the level that they have reached is bigger than anything, you know, I've got. I mean, it's like, they have reached a high level because of the intensity that they bring.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something else to keep in mind. I mean, these, you know, don't think, well, the guy's making this much, he's cruising. No, because these guys don't know how to cruise.
I don't watch soccer games and think, well, that guy's not trying very hard. I mean, they're all working really hard and running in ways that I can't even fathom.
Yeah.
So
they got Chris Durkin back.
They did.
This week. That's, I think, a good step.
Yes.
For the team. I mean, it gives them, gives them a steady defensive midfield hand, improves the link between the back line and the attack.
Yes.
And he's just I wasn't going to say dynamic, but he is an energetic guy who is constantly going.
Yeah, talk about work on the field.
Look
at how much he runs. Although there was a stat for, I'm going to forget who it was, Hartle, I think, ran like 7-8 miles during that last game, and that's also an incredible amount.
Yeah, that's kind of the amount that, that Durkin usually does. Durkin came out in the 75th minute for the omnipresent Alfredo Morales, who would not have thought it, but he has now played in all three games. And as a guy that was signed, you thought, you know, because they need some depth there, he all of a sudden has become one of the most regular guys in the lineup coming off the bench. The fact he can only go like, you know, apparently 20, 25 minutes. But as he said, as he told me the first week of the year, like, look, at my stage, I know how to play 20 minutes in a game.
I can do that.
And I know how to, even if I'm not in as fit of shape as I need to be, because he's had a very short training camp. I mean, his team had a 5-week training camp. He had a 2.5-week training camp.
Right.
But he said, you know, I can do that. So, but anyway, Durkin back. I mean, that lineup is as close to the first 11, if there ever is such a thing as a first 11 for this team,
right,
as we will see.
Yes.
The back line is the one place, you know, the center back spot. But other than that, Horn, Totlin, Durkin, Leuven, Toyert, Hartle, Klaus, that is your first 11, with the exception of, you know, or Baumgartel or Nielsen in there in the back.
Which is another reason why it was good to see the offense start doing offensive things, because that's the offense you want to see on the field. As you were saying, that's the lineup you want to see. Mm-hmm. So that they were finally able to get things rolling and to bury the ball is a good sign.
Yeah, that's a big step. Just there's always that mental block when you can't get that first goal, when the goal is wrapped in saran wrap and it just won't go in, and you have all these chances and everyone's collar is getting tighter and they now have collars,
the literal collar.
Undo the buttons to make that collar looser. It's just a breakthrough to finally get, and not only to get one, then to get three. I mean, that is a big thing, because the other goals, I mean, Hartle and Betcher's goals were nice goals, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, Toyert's may have been, you know, a gift from the heavens, but those other ones, those were goals.
Those were earned, yeah.
Yeah, and those were well taken, well struck, and, you know, and nice build-ups. Mm-hmm. You know, the ball, you know, Hebert plays with Betcher or Toyert to Hartle, and plays coming out of the back. Actually, the initial balls on both of those, Josh Yarrow and Klaus, I think,
right,
the initial passes on both those made things happen.
Yes.
So that is good. And yeah, they could have had more with better finishing.
They could have had more with better finishing, but Los Angeles could have had more with worse goalkeeping. So you know, you can't question it too much.
Yeah. And the Galaxy could have, Gabriel Peck had a wide open net in front of him and shot wide in the game. I think it would have made it 2-1 in like the 75th or 80th minute or something.
Lucky moments.
Yes. So, but those things go into, but they have played three games. They have three shutouts, three clean sheets, as they like to say in the soccer business. Only team to do that. I think they're only the 11th team in MLS history in 30 years of MLS soccer to start the season with three shutouts.
I'm going to go out on a limb, though, and think that Seattle's going to score.
Yeah. Coming to town, when you talk about zeros, there's a zero with St. Louis City. It's the only team it has yet to get a point off of in the Western Conference. There are some Eastern Conference teams that they've only played once, but they have played the Seattle Sounders four times and lost to them four times. They played the LAFC four times but got a tie, and one of them lost the other three. But the Sounders, 0-4 on them. How many goals did they have?
They had 5 goals
against
LAFC, over the weekend.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a team that's playing in, as we've pointed out a couple of times, they're playing in two tournaments right now. I mean, they're playing MLS and they're playing CONCACAF. So it's a tired team. And yes, they have a game before the game here in St. Louis. They're not looking like a tired team.
No. Though if they are, that would be the game, because that would be their fifth in 15 days.
Right.
And I would assume, just from our travel, that they would come here. They play in Mexico City on Wednesday. And it just doesn't seem like going Mexico City to Seattle.
To St. Louis.
You know, and you'd get back on Thursday, mm-hmm. either you know, what time of day, depending on do you stay the night or how quick do you get back. But then you're looking at on Friday flying to St. Louis for a game. It just seems like you just go straight from Mexico City to Seattle and to St. Louis. And both STLs, Seattle, St. Louis. But
it is quite confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. But go just straight here from, mm-hmm. from there and just, you know,
Cut
out the middleman, because the middleman is not in the middle. If they were in Houston or Dallas, okay, it's on the way. But Seattle, not on the way.
No.
And they do a lot of travel, and so, yeah. So who knows what roster you get? How many guys they need to play in that game? You know, against Cruz Azul on Wednesday, and then come to here. So that will be one thing working in cities. Favor. And another thing they have to try to take advantage of,
yes,
when you are presented these opportunities, take advantage of them.
Season.
You know, because they are, I always love this about how sports like hockey and soccer work, where ties are part of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That City went from two games, two ties, you know, good, not so good, things to take. Boy, not scoring a goal, but not allowing a goal.
Right, right.
But now they beat the Galaxy. Now they're undefeated in three games.
It turns on a dime.
They were undefeated in two games before, but it didn't have quite a – but undefeated in three games with a win and two times. Okay, you can work with that.
Yeah. I mean three games suddenly is that's a trend.
Yes,
as
it is.
They say in the news business, are there three of them?
Yeah.
Then it's
a
trend.
Trend, yeah. And so it is a trend, and they have now gone three games, and they've yet to lose, and they've yet to allow a goal. And so there are good things happening. And
the future is looking slightly rosier than it was at the end of the San Diego game.
And look, they've won a game on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they won a game on the road this year 6 months earlier than they did last year.
So
they don't have this thing hanging over their head on every road game they go on from here on out. Mm-hmm. You know, when are you going to win on the road? When are you going to win on the road? Which is an impression of me, because I was when are you going to win?
I was about to say that's a great impression of yourself.
So,
there.
Yeah. Though I usually would try to structure it.
You usually have a little bit of an intro to the question. You're not quite as nasally.
No, certainly not nasally. Certainly, this is sound like doves.
Dulcet tones.
The dulcet, yes, indeed. Choose your like Pavarotti is how I and the Pavarotti of the press conferences. It's how it's generally regarded. So tough game coming up against Seattle, though, you know, things are looking good, because if you were to say, what does this team need to do to win? Well, they need Roman Berkey to play like Roman Berkey. They need the guys who can score goals to score goals. Okay, that's two of the three. Then the next one is, you know, just limit the chances of the other team, and they can do that. So it's an encouraging situation.
It's an encouraging situation, and it's an encouraging situation given that there was only a week between a game where they really didn't look good to a game where suddenly, well, I'm sure they put a lot of practice work into this, but mm-hmm. it paid off. We mm-hmm. saw the results on the field. We saw the results within the first 5 minutes of the game. Mm-hmm. They had already had more corners mm-hmm. than they had the entire previous game.
Yeah.
So it you saw the team. I don't know exactly what happened in practice, but you saw them clearly say, that can't happen again. We need to move on.
Yeah. And they've now made two trips to the West Coast. Only five more to go to the West Coast.
I will say, and I texted you this after the game, that time slot was perfect
mm-hmm.
because presser's over, you were able to write, and it wasn't 2 a.m. when you were done.
Mm-hmm.
If they could play all of their games at that time slot.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I don't think they're in big demand for the Sunday game of the week.
They should be.
Well, I think many teams would certainly feel that way, that they should be that. So this is, you know, they're a win in two ties out of three games. You can't complain about that. They've gotten 4 points on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty good. I mean, they had 11 points on the road all of last year, which is not good. I mean, 11 out of a
not
possible 51. So that was, you know, not a great number. But now they've got four out of a possible six on the road so far.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good you know, those are trends even early on that they like to see. And everything they will, if they could beat Seattle, it would be it would set up an amazing game in Philadelphia in week five, because Philadelphia is off to a big start with Bradley Carnell and Indiana Vasilev.
Wait, I know those names.
Yes. And so that would be an interesting one. And actually, you know, San Diego, you know, which is still rolling along, but they won't win their first five because they tied with City. So they'll the record of five in a row.
City at least can protect that record.
Protect that record, but it could be an interesting showdown in Philadelphia.
Yes.
In 2 weeks, but it'll be an interesting showdown on Saturday at a warmer Energizer Park than we saw the last time we were there.
Even though it's supposed to be slightly chillier Saturday than the rest of the week, but that's okay.
Yeah.
It will eventually get very warm.
Yeah.
So we can.
Yeah. But it's not going to be 30 like it was
the
last time.
We won't need hand warmers.
Yeah. No. No, I still have some with me. what else do we need to talk about on this? So City 2, we should say, made their season debut on Sunday, playing almost at the same time as City. And they won 3-0, eerily speaking. So a good start to the season for them. And they were playing North Texas, which is another defending champion. They were the defending champions of MLS Next Pro as well. Though MLS Next Pro, being a developmental league, it's a weird thing where there's so much turnover of players between teams that it's difficult to say, you know, how much resemblance that bears to last year's team. It's a, and but City too, a fair amount of guys back from last season. A goal by Brandon McSorley, a goal by Miguel Perez,
nice,
and then an own goal in the second minute that got things started. All four all four of City's homegrowns started in that game, so that tells you something. I mean, Tyson Pierce getting a start. He as the youngest of the bunch, a chance for him there. But Caden Glover, Miguel Perez, Mekhi Joyner, and Tyson Pierce. So that is. There's Ernesto Chavez, I believe, I've got his name correctly. He's an academy kid who practiced last week with City SC. They needed an extra body, and so they brought him in to practice. So, and City 2 did not have Emil Yaskalainen, who apparently does not have his necessary paperwork taken care of yet for him to play. So. But other than that, so City 2 off to a good start there. We have another game there in Kansas City on Wednesday, and then they have their home opener the week after. So the week City is in Philadelphia is the week that City 2 will have its first game. For those who want to see on a much more affordable level, check out Energizer Park and see what the future of City SC looks like. The Saturday afternoon games with City 2. Afford that opportunity.
Much cheaper.
Much cheaper. Much simpler. because even a big crowd, I mean, is like 10,000.
Right.
But a lot of those crowds are 3,000 or 4,000. So
yes.
if you have kids you want to bring, City 2 is a good is an excellent resource to have. And it's the same game. On that note, Beth, have we had any? I think that's about it. I think that's it. So, thank you all once again for listening. Can't tell you enough how much it means to you. I could say it more, but then we'd just be filling out the podcast with me saying how great it is that people listen.
But we are very grateful.
But we are very grateful. So until next week, for Beth, I'm Tom. Be seeing you.